a further review, as this is one of Frank's favorite songs.
Do not listen to him. He is selling you snake oil.
We don't sell snake oil, but we provide an entertaining and thought-provoking sports show on 88.3 WXUT. Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And sometimes we provide a life lesson. Ain't that right, Frank?
Life lesson my ass.
Don't be a hater. And tune in to AFR Saturday mornings 11 to 1 on WXUT.
Welcome back to 88.3 WT's After Further Review. Back on here live now, actually on my actual Facebook page, but I'll share it actually to my After Further Review page. There's a way, I know there's got to be a way to have this on our regular page that we have it on. Also, listen to us on our iTunes at WXUT After Further Review. And yeah, that instrumental is a little bad right there. Got to get that out of there. And then also make sure you hit us up on our SoundCloud page. Now back at it, we got David the Man of God Harris with us, as he's going to talk a little bit with us about our NBA segment here. Tracy McGrady into the Hall of Fame, possibly. But first, what are we going to go into, David? Let's do this first. We'll play this bit for you, because this has been kind of grinding my gears just a little bit, David. As Kobe Altman is now the new GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I remember a month ago, we talked about how I went to a coach's clinic and I met him. And I said, you know, this is going to be an interesting time for this new GM, because he didn't want to answer one of my questions. I asked him a question about Kyrie Irving. You know, are they going to pretty much keep him? He was in the coach's clinic and he said, you know, he wanted people to stay in Cleveland. You know, he wanted people to, you know, he didn't want people that didn't want to be there. And obviously Kyrie Irving wanted a trade. Okay, whatever. He wants to be the man. So when he opened up the floor to questions, I asked the first question. I said, well, what are you going to do with players that don't want to be there? Someone like a Kyrie Irving, what do you do with that situation? He totally avoided the question. Young guy, he's only 34. And this is his first time ever being the GM, the head guy. From one of my sources, I will tell you this that I know, a good source that is in the NBA and is a scout. The media made it seem like he was the second man behind David Griffin. No, that is not true. He was actually like a third or fourth scout in line. This is coming from one of my sources, and this is a really good source of mine. There was a lot of people that were actually kind of shocked that this guy ended up becoming the GM for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this clip. They actually introduced the new Cavs, Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, and the new center. I can't really pronounce his name. But finally, when they put the mic in front of Isaiah Thomas, as you know, he has a bad hip. So pretty much you traded a franchise player for a guy that is not bad, who was really probably the Boston Celtics franchise player, but he's injury prone now. And not to mention, he's up for a big contract. He made it known that he wants a max contract. So his contract is up, and he possibly will not be in to start the beginning part of the season because of this hip. Now, they're not going for surgery. They're saying they're going to try to rehab it. But, as you know, how many people actually trade for somebody when they know that he's injury prone? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this from this press conference, and then me and Dave are going to kind of debate this. I don't know if David can hear it or not, but hopefully he checked it out.
I don't want this to be the Isaiah Thomas hip press conference. And so I'm just going to, with all the respect, shut down the hip questions. If we want to talk about Isaiah, let's talk about Isaiah the All-Star. Let's talk about Isaiah, the guy that averaged 29 points a game last year. Let's talk about him as a leader and what he's going to bring to this franchise in terms of his performance on the floor when we get him back. So, again, guys, we appreciate the questions, but this is not going to turn into the Isaiah Thomas hip press conference. We want to talk about what he's going to add and contribute to this team and what these guys are going to bring to the table and how we're going to continue to try to compete for a championship with these guys' help.
Well, then once again, he's avoiding questions. That's the little snippet that they had for you. They were people that were basically, before that happened, I got the full interview. People, we want to know what's up with the hip. You know, that's the main question. We already know what Isaiah Thomas can do. We already know he's an all-star. We already know what he can do. He can average close to 28 points per game. I don't know if he'll probably average that now with LeBron James there. But the fact of the matter is, you pretty much traded a guy that was going to be the man of your organization before LeBron came back. And now you trade him for a guy where his contract's up next year and he possibly will only play half the season. Now, David, you're back here on After Further Review on the phone lines. Hopefully you looked at the interview or heard the interview. As I've said before, this Kobe Altman guy, I don't know about him. I don't think he's going to really survive. Already avoiding questions and already trying to dictate the press conferences. If it's going to be a rocky road for Cleveland. Maybe not this year with LeBron, but those hip questions are going to keep coming up if Isaiah Thomas keeps missing more games. And not to mention that if Kyrie basically tears it up with Boston. David, what do you think?
Yeah, I think kind of just the Kobe Altman in general, it's kind of hard to shut down an interview and tell the press, hey, we're not going to answer the questions about things that everyone in the room already knows about, has heard about, wants to get inquiries about. Like, everyone wants to know what the status of Isaiah Thomas's health is. Like, that's a valid question, both for the fan base to know as they look into another season, but also not being afraid to say, hey, we're letting you know. We've already let the teammates know. We've already let LeBron know. We've already let JR, Kevin, all the guys in the locker room know. Here's how he is health-wise. Because if you're just going to keep concealed all these questions that are the underlying elephants in the room, that's not only going to destroy your confidence in your relationship with the media, you're going to get more and more dissent from the fans, which can lead to, I don't know, maybe fans turning on you pretty quickly if things look poor in the first month or two, or if Isaiah Thomas's hit turns out to be even worse than what many of us are speculating it might be.
I think it's worse. I totally think it's worse, because why would you go blatantly just cut off in the middle of the press conference and say, well, we're not going to make this the hip press conference? Well, it is. I mean, come on. Now, if he would have traded Isaiah Thomas for J.R. Smith, a bucket of chicken, and Iman Shumpert, well, then the hip questions probably wouldn't be as prevalent. Okay, you got a good deal. But here's the fact of the matter is the Celtics are your number one competition in the Eastern Conference. You traded your second best player on the team, who still, by the way, had two more years on his contract if LeBron decided to take the old Bolt job. And he could have been the cornerstone. You trade him for this guy who's a small guy who had two great seasons in Boston. But the fact of the matter is, he has a bad hip. That's a major injury. I mean, come on. This is what irks me. This is telltale signs that tells me that this guy is not ready for the job. He speaks a good game, but if you're already being combatant with the media, that is a bad, bad move. And you know that, David, and I know that by being part of the media. You cannot be combatant with the media. That's just a no-no.
Yeah, and I think it would be even one thing if it was, hey, we made this trade in, you know, July, where, you know, he has a little bit of time to rehab that hip injury. We get more diagnostics, can run some more tests, so that by September, like by the time September comes around, where it's, hey, we're a month away from the start of the NBA season, and we still don't know what we have here in terms of his health. I think the urgency of, like, do you really realize that your point guard has a hip that we all agree, if you have a hip injury at that size, it's going to debilitate you. Your backup point guard is Derrick Rose, and there are jokes for days about his knees, dating back to his Chicago days. Like, you're coming into the season that is an important, critical season, because we all know LeBron's leaving. It's just a matter of where he's going to go. But you want to end with some kind of good feeling to make at least LeBron feel as though this season isn't wash. Because right now it looks like, oh, we're just throwing whoever out there. Forget the health. And that's going to sit with people the wrong way. I know if I was a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, I would be mad at my GM right now for like, hey, we want to know. What is this guy's health?
Yeah, why would
like,
you?
It's a simple question.
Why
like,
would you
what's
trade?
What's this guy's health?
You already knew. He knew he had the bad hip at the end of the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, some people said he injured the hip in midseason and played through it. Now, I don't know if they gave him a cortisone shot. And, you know, when you once you get cortisone, depending on the injury. Now, sometimes you can get a cortisone shot or whatever, and the effects of it will hurt you. Now, they're saying in Bleacher Report that supposedly he's had this injury for years. I'll tell you this. They're saying maybe it could be some, you know, torn away cartilage, and it's kind of hurting the healing process. I've known people that have had bad hips, and hip injuries are some of the worst. They get progressively worse. They don't get better. They get worse. I know a couple of guys that played basketball had hip injuries in their late 20s, early 30s, and then when they got to pretty much their 40s, they needed a new hip. It just got continually worse. They tried to still play basketball, and toward the end, they couldn't really play basketball. Even after they got the hip injury, even in their late 20s, early 30s, you could tell the difference. You know, your hip is a lot of, you know, you do a lot of twisting and turning. Believe it or not, that lower extremity right there, and trying to pronounce the word, that you push off of that. And him being a little guy, he needs everything he can get to get the advantage. If he starts losing some of that ability, then it makes you wonder, why'd you trade this guy for Kyrie Irving? You knew that he had a hip injury. It'd be different if you didn't know that the man did not have a hip injury, but you knew, and you pulled the trigger for the trade. And I understand that Kobe Altman wants guys to be there for Cleveland and all this and all that, but you threw in the draft pick. But the fact of the matter is that this is already a blundering error. You've shown me at the coach's clinic that you want to hide things. You can't hide things. The one thing I hate. The media does not really go after people. I tell you that right now. Now there are some people, one out of every 150 media members, that try to make a name for themselves and try to be, you know, guerrilla tactics or whatever and attack people. But usually those guys get waved off. You know, no one really takes them seriously, or guys that are living in their mom's basement trying to do these blogs and say that they have sources, even though they're cherry picking stuff off of other blogs or off the other internet. Those guys don't get taken seriously. But remember, media members, they're human just like everybody else. If you want to play hardball or you want to hide things, that is a big no-no. You just don't do that. Like I tell people, just in relationships, be upfront and honest. You know, he doesn't have a timetable of when this guy's going to play. But if you want to sit up there and he wants to play this game, he's gonna be going through a bumpy ride all season, especially if Isaiah Thomas is not playing at least one-fourth of the season. If Isaiah Thomas does not come back, at least the season starts in October. I think it's October 17th. If he doesn't come back by November 17th, there's going to be a lot of questions asked. No doubt about this. And then if it moves all the way to Christmas, then what? It's going to get worse and worse. And I see this guy being more combative, and you can't be combative. And it just seems like to me, like you said, Cleveland being Cleveland, this is just a blunder. I know you're a GM, you're trying to prove yourself, but it seems like to me right now, as we're speaking in September, and it might change, it looks like the Celtics pretty much fleeced the Cavs in the new GM.
Yeah, and in a season where a lot of people expect it to be, oh, Cleveland just automatically cakewalk through the finals, LeBron's just going to carry this team. That's a thing. You're already losing Kyrie Irving, who, let's just be honest, hit the biggest shot in franchise history to get your team that NBA Finals trophy in that Game 7. So you already lost a big offensive weapon. Now you're substituting Kyrie Irving for an Isaiah Thomas, who agreed, offensively, great. But if he one, if he's not out there, or if he's limited when he's out there, he can't be that fourth quarter dynamic player that he was in Boston. He just can't.
And he's and that's the thing is that Isaiah Thomas is the main piece of the trade. You're the main piece. Jay Crowder, he's a throwing guy. He's just another guy. Don't get me wrong. You know, I think he adds a little bit of depth to the Cavs, but he's just a regular guy. Isaiah Thomas is the main guy here. You knew about the hip injury after the Eastern Conference Finals. Even the hip held up the deal. You know, he still had to pass his physical. 4 months later, this guy is not working out. He's not playing basketball. He's just doing treatment. And they're not going to do surgery. They're trying to hold out. Well, I don't know if we're going to do surgery or not. Because I'll tell you this right now. If you do surgery on that hip, one or two things are going to happen. It's almost like your back. Either it's going to be good and you'll do well, or it'll be bad. There's no in between. There's nothing. There's not, well, they do the surgery, you got to wait, the hip will heal itself. No. No. Nope. Nope. Just like Bo Jackson. I know they've come a long way, you know, 25 years since Bo Jackson has injured his hip. But if you mess up your hip, the game is over, especially in pro sports. In pro sports, you know, he could now, Isaiah Thomas could probably go over to the Cleveland Rec Center or whatever, or a Y League and dominate with a bad hip. But in the NBA or any pro sports league, if you have a bad hip, the game is over. You're not going to be elite. I'm sorry. You're just not. And this is the main point of the deal. You gave up Kyrie Irving for this, which at first, okay, it looks like, you know, this was an even trade. But like I said, it's not going to help the Cavs if he doesn't play any games. If he's missing over 20 games, this deal is terrible. It doesn't help anybody. Nobody. And that's what's unsettling to me.
Yeah, it doesn't sit well. It's like, it's not as though everyone didn't know about the hip. Like, if you watched that conference finals last year, you saw Isaiah Thomas, like, was not 100%. Both physically and more, well, we all know the emotionally aspect, he was just not there. And so, him playing through all that, and he referenced it in his piece of the Undefeated, his letter, like, he was going through some stuff, like, but physically, you can't expect to win a finals if you're not healthy. And if you're going into the season not healthy, like, that says something even worse. But yet you're getting, you know, I don't know. This just doesn't sit well with me. And this is your first big deal.
No, he basically, he got taken to school. Because think about this. LeBron can leave and Isaiah Thomas can leave. So, and what if Isaiah Thomas doesn't really play? Once again, he wants a max contract. And let's face it. If he comes in, he does come in later in the season and he plays decent, and maybe he does well. He makes like a decent playoff run. You still got the fact of the matter is you got to look at the future of the franchise. The future of the franchise was Kyrie Irving. I understand he wanted to be traded, but you know, any smart genius would have tried to find a way to figure it out. You're going to figure this out. We're going to work together. Not to mention, if he wants to be the man, LeBron is gone. I mean, this is almost like the Lakers in back with Kobe and Shaq. You know, Shaq had to go. You know, Kobe said, you know, it's my time to shine. I want to be the man. The Lakers said, well, you know, we're going with Kobe. That's what we're going to do. So if I was the Cavaliers, I would have did the same thing. You know, LeBron, thanks for getting the championship for us. I know you're a dynamic player and I love you to death. But, you know, we're looking here at the future. You know, by that time next season, Kyrie's 26 years old. We know what he can do. And everyone could say, you know, well, his player efficiency when LeBron's not in there. Yeah, okay, whatever. But now at the situation, you don't have anything. You have nothing. If LeBron and Isaiah Thomas both leave and Kyrie does well in Boston, you shot yourself in the foot.
Yeah, and about those player efficiency ratings, like, everyone keeps bringing up, oh, Kyrie's horrible, you know, when LeBron James is in the court. That team is not built around Kyrie Irving. It's built for LeBron. It's the reason why when LeBron came back, the roster between Kyrie's final season by himself and when LeBron came back are drastically different because the team that Kyrie had when it was just him was horrible, like universally horrible. But when LeBron came back, they brought in the wheelhouse. They paid out the wazoo for everybody. Like, that team is not built for Kyrie Irving to be the guy. And we all knew that. And so now you have a position where at least you, now you have some pieces that you can, okay, work with Kyrie Irving. He can be the guy when LeBron leaves next summer because he's leaving. We all know. He knows. Like the GM, ownership, players, his mama know. Like the guy on the corner knows. His barber knows. Like everybody knows LeBron is leaving. And so to set, you're essentially setting yourself, hey, we have this draft pick. You're basically hoping for that guy to replace not only LeBron, but now also Kyrie and Isaiah Thomas, who's not going to be 100% healthy. Like, looking at it, broad strokes, I don't see anyone in this draft class that can do all of those things.
Well, no 18, 19-year-old is going to help you win right away. We already know that. So you don't have to wait 4 or 5 years. I don't care how talented you are. I mean, you could be on LeBron James status. You're not going to be a 19-year-old going into a grown man's league and you're going to start competing for championships. Ain't happening. I mean, let's face it. Michael Jordan didn't do it. LeBron James didn't do it. Now there's some maybe some differences to the rules, obviously Magic Johnson, but then again, he had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and the Lakers needed that one more piece of a dynamic player like Magic to do it. Bird did it in 2 years with the Celtics, but you know, those are anomalies.
I mean, Jordan didn't do it.
Right. Those are not. Isaiah Thomas didn't do it. Those are anomalies. You got to go through the growing up and the hard bumps on the head process through pro sports. You just don't just come in there and just start dominating and wrecking shop. That just doesn't happen, especially trying to win championships. So that's not going to happen with these young guys. But I just feel that, you know, some people are saying, like, with knowledge of the situation, that he also has arthritis. Remember, you got to play an 82-game season. You're going to be monitoring this guy's minutes. I mean, you're going to, like you said, you're going to probably start the season with Derrick Rose being your point guard. And I like Derrick Rose. I mean, he's not the MVP Derrick Rose, that's for sure. He's going to be efficient and solid. But like I said, the main point of the deal is if you're trying to look toward the future, I mean, man, now maybe the Cavs might say this is the last hurrah and then they're going to pull what the 98 Bulls did and just pretty much clean house and get rid of everybody, and then but it's going to be some long winters in Cleveland by the lake. I'll tell you that right now. And let's face it, Cleveland's not really a destination that a lot of free agents come to. So Kobe Altman's going to be learning that lesson too. He's going to be learning that one, that without LeBron, it's going to be hard to be building a championship contender in Cleveland. That's just the point blank period situation. Unless he can scout real well, he can get young talent and maybe get another LeBron, which I like I said, with this draft class, I think there's really talented players, but I don't know, we'll see. But I don't really see any LeBrons with that one. So enough about that trade. Now talk a little bit about the Basketball Hall of Fame. Remember, it's the Basketball Hall of Fame. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. So, you know, it pretty much is anyone that makes a good contribution to the Hall of Fame. Now, I'm really picky on my Hall of Fames. I am. You know how I am, David. Hall of Fame, to me, you got to be dominant in all areas. You can't be that shining light for a few years and then kind of peter out. I mean, I pretty much think you need to dominate from day one till the day you retire. I understand maybe the last few years of your career, you know, it happened to Dr. J, it happened to Michael Jordan, where you're not the best, but you're still competitive. And let's mention some of these people that made it into the Hall of Fame. Most notably, Jerry Krause from the Bulls, the GM. A lot of people didn't like him. I think it was a travesty, though. I think they waited until he passed away to let him get it into the Hall of Fame. I thought that was kind of dirty by the NBA, but you know, that stuff happens. You celebrate the guy after he passes away. They had plenty of time to get him in the Hall of Fame, but at least he made it. I think he rubbed a lot of players the wrong way when he mentioned that organizations win championships and not players. I think that was kind of misworded a little bit. I think he meant that, you know, all of the organization helps. You got to go through the scouting staff and the general managers to the players to all be working together, and coaches to build basically a championship culture along with championship talent. But obviously when you kind of tick off the greatest player of all time, Michael Jordan, you know, you're going to get a little bit of backlash. I understand that one. Also, Becca Lobo, I thumbs up on that one. Great contributor for women's basketball. Thumbs up. Muffet McGraw, great contributor again, great coach for Notre Dame. Thumbs up. Bill Self, when I think of Hall of Fame coaches, I don't really think of Bill Self.
Yeah, Bill Self is that.
But he has done well in Illinois. He's done well at Kansas. If you really look at his stats as a coach, he actually has pretty good stats. So I guess he could get in as that borderline guy. And then there's Tracy McGrady. Now, some people are going to say, well, he's not a Hall of, you know, if you say he's not a Hall of Famer, then you're a hater. I'm not being a hater here. I really think Tracy McGrady was a great player. But this opens up a Pandora's box of situations here. He played 15 years in the league. You got to remember, though, his first few years in the league, he didn't do anything. I listened to an interview when he had Scott Farrell. He said that, you know, his first coach, who was Darryl Walker, he pretty much called him a bumbling idiot. But his first year, he basically went to the NBA games and then went to the hotel and slept. I mean, he had to get used to the NBA life because he came straight from high school. Then he kind of did really well, you know, second and third year with his cousin Vince Carter in Toronto, a lot of buzz. And then by 2001, around his fourth year in the league, going in his fifth, he went to Orlando and was supposed to team up with Grant Hill and possibly Tim Duncan, but Tim Duncan stayed with the Spurs. But Grant Hill ended up having ankle injuries, and that derailed his career. But then that's when Tracy McGrady took off. And from that point, pretty much with the Magic till maybe the first couple years with the Houston Rockets, he had a hell of a career. And then obviously he had microfracture, you know, knee surgery, and then he kind of fell off. Like I said, hell of a talent, but he's one of those guys where you say, dude, you had a hell of a career, but you're not a Hall of Famer. You know, you're at the door, you're at the doorstep, knocking on the door, but you're not really a Hall of Famer. What do you think?
Yeah, and we were talking a little bit pre-show about kind of just, is it, when we think of the Hall of Fame, it's numbers versus impact. And kind of earlier, like in your monologue, you mentioned like a lasting legacy of kind of guys that dominated from day one. And so just looking at the other class, like a name that kind of epitomizes that is the high school coach, Robert Hughes. I mean, 47 years, 1,300, you know, over 1,330 wins.
Dang.
You know, 35 district championships, 5 state championships. Like, those are, like, both in terms of impact and numbers are like, okay, that guy's a Hall of Fame. Like, so I think in comparison to that kind of guy, even, like, Muffet McGraw, what she has done at Notre Dame, what Rebecca Lobo did kind of as both player and kind of one of those.
Put Connecticut on the
influential
map.
Influential, yeah.
Started Husky.
The WNBA.
Right, started Husky Mania. Connecticut, and they even admitted it in the videos at the Hall of Fame ceremony. I watched it. She was the key cornerstone to pretty much put Connecticut on the map and get women to go to Connecticut and start that dynasty. She was the keystone of that. So, yeah, and part of the W. Now, her WNBA career, you know, you don't really remember her for WNBA, but she was on an undefeated college team in 95 and won the national championship. Yeah, that's Hall of Fame status. But Tracy McGrady, no, not George McGinnis from the ABA days, I think is a Hall of Famer. But, I mean, Tracy McGrady was in the league for 15 years. Natural scoring ability. He led the NBA in scoring twice, was named to 7 consecutive All-Star teams from 2001 to 2007, which was his stretch where he was dominant. Teams didn't go very far in the playoffs. I don't even think he got past the first round. He had a couple of highlights, you know, dunking on, you know, Bradley, but who didn't dunk on Bradley? You know, the 7'6" guy. You know, Sean Bradley was pretty much, you know, getting dunk tortured all the time in the league. So, you know, okay, great. Final year in the league, he could have won a championship. By the way, which team did he play for? I don't know if David remembers, but, you know, Ray Allen pretty much hit a 3-pointer in game 6 while the ropes were coming out and they were trying to wheel the championship out. But Ray Allen had a different a course of plan on that one, and then the Heat ended up winning in game 7 over the Spurs. But McGrady was actually on that team, but he was a bench player. He didn't even contribute. I don't even think he even played in game 7. So, you know, it's like, coulda, woulda, shoulda. Well, if he didn't have injuries, you know what? That happens to a lot of players. But now he's in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, he thinks that, you know, he's great, but I don't think this guy's Hall of Fame material. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I was kind of looking at what his kind of bio or they in the news release from the Naismith, and they were saying his impact in terms of impact versus numbers, his impact is that high school to NBA group, which that's going to be a shaky road kind of coming up as we get into this generation of players that are the Kevin Garnett, like eventually the Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, who are, their impact is more of they were in that short time period where it was, you can make that jump to high school to the NBA. These are the guys that we think of that were the first to do it and kind of making that road. So that's, like, I understand that impact, but at the same time, that was that impact really the same level as what Rebecca Lobo did in terms of putting UConn on the map, or Muff McGraw transforming Notre Dame, or kind of the Robert Hughes, just high school dominance. Like, so that one for me, I'm still wrestling with whether it's crazy. Like, at first glance, if you just had a, you know, yes or no, my first glimmer is no. Like, I'm not. It takes some work to say, hey, he's a Hall of Famer.
Right, and actually, Tracy McGrady was on the playoff team. I think they got rid of Steven Jackson to make room for Tracy McGrady that year. They don't even have his final stats. They have him in Atlanta. I mean, his first year in Toronto, he averaged 7 points a game. Then 9, his second year. Third year, he jumped to 15.4. That was basically his career in Toronto. Then when he got to the Magic, he averaged 26, 25. Led the league in scoring back-to-back years in 03 and 04 at 32 and 28. Then it kind of dipped to 25. That last year in Orlando when he got traded to Houston for Stevie Franchise, then he averaged 24, 24, 21. And in his last year in Houston, 15 he had with them. And then he played 6 games with Houston at 3.2, but I believe that was with the microfracture knee injury. Then when he got to New York, it was single digits of 9.4. He went to Detroit for a year. I actually seen McGrady play in Detroit. Averaged about 8 points, 5.3, and 19.6. Like I said, though, but didn't really get any wins. He didn't. I could see if in that time span, you know, he was getting in the conference finals or he had some, you know, some playoff juice, I would probably say, yeah, you know, he could be a possible Hall of Famer. But no. I don't see that. I mean, and now that opens up a floodgate. So with Tracy McGrady getting in, does that basically say, how about these guys? These are people that are eligible in 2018. Jason Kidd, Rasheed Wallace,
yeah.
Grant Hill, Richard Hamilton, Marcus Camby.
Well, I think just out of that, those five premier, I think we both can agree Jason Kidd should be in.
Oh, Jason Kidd's an automatic. Like, he's solid. A first ballot. There's no question about
and
that.
And then Grant Hill.
But some people say
Grant
no.
Grant Hill should be that other.
Some people say no.
Yeah.
Mind you, it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, so it goes through all contributions. Now, Let's look at Grant Hill's career here. When he got to Detroit, he pretty much resurrected them. Had a great 6 seasons from 94 to 2000, like I said, until he had the ankle injuries. But he was one of the most dominant players. Some people were saying he was going to take the torch away from Jordan.
Yeah.
But the thing I think he has the edge over Tracy McGrady is people have to remember his college career. I mean, he was pretty much the missing piece that helped Duke to 2 back-to-back national championships in 91-92. They got knocked off by Jason Kidd and Cal in the tournament. But then his senior year, he gets back to the championship game and loses to the Arkansas Razorbacks, who had 40 minutes of hell. He went to 3 Final Fours in 4 years and could have possibly had 3 championships. So you got his college career and his NBA career.
Like, he was part of the, like, in that 30 for 30, like, what made Duke become Duke? Like, he was part of that group.
Oh, yeah. And he was on a few Olympic teams. That's Hall of Fame. That to me is Hall of Fame. But there's some people that are saying, no, he's not a Hall of Famer. Well, wait a minute. If Tracy McGrady gets in the Hall of Fame, then you got to open up for Grant Hill. Richard Hamilton, maybe. Another one.
Yeah.
Great college career.
But he has a ring, though, so that's going to be that.
Well, yeah. But then again, David, like we mentioned earlier, is it the situation where you're at the doorstep and you're knocking on the door, but you just don't get in? I don't see. When I think of Hall of Fame, you got to do something to me that says, yeah, you're in. Because then what's the point of having the Hall of Fame? Think about it. What is the point of having a Hall of Fame? You're just letting anybody in. It's not a Hall of Fame. It's just the fame.
Yeah. I mean, Canton did it and is doing it. So it's like,
Who's a borderline Hall of Famer in Canton?
I'd have to go through and kind of think. Just when I think of some of the recent, I'm going to have to pull up the Hall of Fame because there have been a couple guys that I noticed.
No, don't say the old timers because I don't try to talk about the old timers because obviously I didn't see them play.
And old timers, I leave those for older guys that saw those players. Like that's not for me.
There's some guys that you know that, like I said, that were in this class that I had no clue who they were. You know, like Zach Clayton, Manny Jackson, I believe, was part of the Harlem Globetrotters, I believe. Like I said, there's certain guys, like I said, I don't try to comment on because if I don't really, I can look them up and look up stats, great, or what their contribution is. Also with the Basketball Hall of Fame, I don't really get on the foreign guys. Like Dirk Nowitzki, I think, is a Hall of Famer. Great career, not to mention he's done a lot for international as far as being on the German side. So he's a Hall of Famer for me. But, you know, I know who he is. But like I said, a lot of the foreign guys, you know, some people always wonder, well, why is this foreign guy in here? And it's like, well, he made a big contribution internationally, like Oscar Schmidt for Brazil. You know, didn't have really a great NBA career, but the man was probably one of the most talented players in Brazil. Or Arvydas Sabonis, you know, before his knee injuries and before he got to the NBA, the man was lethal. And he played in Russia. So, I mean, he was more lethal than, you know, moonshine vodka. So those are guys that, you know, I can understand. And then also with some of the coaches and some of the women that have contributed to the game. But other than that, though, like I said, I don't want to make it seem like I'm a hater of Tracy McGrady. I'll mention again, great player. But I think that's a guy that's borderline. If he gets in, then Chris Webber's got to get in. Chris Webber needs to be in the Hall of Fame. For one.
Well, and you bring up.
What are you going to say, David?
Well, you bring up Marcus Camby. It's like.
Yeah, that's.
When he was in college, like, he put UMass on the map and pretty much made Calipari.
Yeah, pretty.
Like, well, helped make Calipari into what Calipari eventually became. So it's like.
Kind of like Rebecca Lobo. Right, like that 30 for 30 what Calipari was talking about in his career, that he needed that one guy he needed to sign, and it was Marcus Camby. Now. He had a great college career, I believe. Some people did say he took money. Okay, whatever. NBA, his first few years in the league were really good. But, I mean, but when you look at the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, though, like Dennis Rodman, Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, do you put Camby at that level? Do you? If he gets in, then Christian Laettner needs to get in. I'm not saying that, you know, many people might say, well, you know, these are guys you must like Duke. Well, Christian Laettner had a 12-year NBA career, only had one NBA All-Star appearance. It was a decent NBA career, but he's got a lot of records. He went to, I believe, Christian Laettner went to 4 Final Fours. I don't think any player's ever done that. And I believe he's number one or number two all time in Final Four scoring.
Yeah, if he's going to get in for it, if he does get in, he gets in for his college, and then people are like, NBA career.
And he was on, well, technically, he's in there because of the NBA Dream Team as a team. So
yeah,
he's got that. But, I mean, like I said, when it comes to Hall of Fames, I'm more, I guess, an elitist. The elite of the elite get in. There's just some people that aren't going to get in. Like, there's people now saying that Robert Horry should get in. I don't really think he should get in. Yeah, he won a bunch of championships. I think he had the potential of being a great player. I mean, his first few years in the league with the Rockets were great. But remember, this was a guy that when he got on a bad team, he didn't do much. I mean, the only thing, you know, when he was with the Phoenix Suns and Danny Ainge, he threw a towel in his face. I mean, he hooked up with the Lakers, granted, a key piece to a team, but you might have seven championships, but I just don't think that always, you know, there's other things you got to do to contribute to the game. Chris Webber, like I said, should get in. Revolutionary player. I mean, the Fab Five with the black socks and the baggy shorts. Got the two straight Final Fours, one as a freshman, obviously losing to a great Duke team. Lost to a North Carolina team that was a great team. Unfortunately, you know, he called the timeout. But then he had a great career in the NBA, put Sacramento basically back on the map. I mean, you know, remember before Chris Webber got to Sacramento, that was Siberia. That's where your career died. Actually, his career resurrected there. Washington, the team he was with, was like, we don't want you anymore. We don't send you to Siberia. Obviously, you know, Jason Williams, Vlade Divac, and, you know, Doug Christie, Nick Anderson, all of them were there, and it helped out. But he was the main key guy. So, like I said, Tracy McGrady gets in. That opens up the door for some of these other guys and maybe some guys that might be debatable. Because I said Rasheed Wallace, you know, I think he was the piece that helped the Pistons get over. But I think he's another one. I don't see him in the high realm of, you know, all, you know, NBA Hall of Famers. But with McGrady getting in, he has a little bit of an argument to get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and it's just, it's going to be so interesting what kind of, or even other guys that are eligible. Look at a guy like Jeff Hornacek or Bill Laimbeer. Like, well, Vlade is even on that list of eligible. It's like, there's so many.
Yeah, Vlade Divac, I think, could get in because of, now, you got to remember, he played with the Lakers. He got to the finals with them in 91, lost, and with the Kings. But once again, he's got the international factor with him.
Yeah, Peja Stojakovic, who, like he really, like, I, you can say before him there weren't really, like, guys that were three-point specialists, but, like, he was a three-point, like, specialist and international game. It's just Glenn Rice, Anthony Mason, Oakley, Kemp.
No. Like, no, not Glenn Rice. Not a bad player. Not Anthony Mason. No. God rest his soul, but he's not a Hall of Famer. No.
But then, and we're bringing up the international piece. Stephon Marbury is eligible. Like, what do you do with that?
No. Yeah, he went to China. He went to China and made money, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
But, I mean, it brings up all these people that are like, well, I mean, if T-Mac isn't, and,
right,
you know,
and then it, oh,
high,
yeah,
school,
how do you make the debate? How do you separate it? I mean, I don't think of Glenn Rice as a Hall of Famer.
I don't either. I was just listing guys, like, prominent guys that are eligible.
If that's the case, why don't we put in Ron Harper? Put in Ron Harper in there.
I mean, Sharif Abdul-Rahim,
No.
Bill Cartwright,
no.
Doc Rivers is eligible.
No.
Like,
and he might do it. Now, he might get in there for coaching, but player, no. I mean, like I said, you just can't let any and everybody be getting into the Hall of Fame, because then it kind of takes away from the Hall of Fame. But like I said, McGrady's in there. They voted him in. You know, you go with what you go with. But like I said, great player, but I just think he kind of just comes up just a little bit short of making it in as a Hall of Famer. You know, he was dominant for that short time span, but
that ultimate injury, if injuries, you know, weren't a factor, but, you know, like with every other player, but it's like, eh.
Yeah, but like I said,
actually,
you can say that for a lot of players.
I think he deserves it.
Right.
But I mean, and it's also interesting that he's one of the few who are Hall of Famers but don't have their number retired. So then that plays into a whole nother, another factor of it.
That is true. So we're done with this segment here. Once again, went over a little bit, but I had to get that off my chest. Usually I don't, but I had to. Coming up next, get into a little bit of the racial divide with Bennett here. As you know, this is an issue that I kind of was grinding my teeth to, and people talk about it. So we'll get David's view on it. David, by the way, I noticed on your other Facebook page you put Minister David. Are you not no longer the David Man of God Harris?
No, I'm still, you know, that's my professional professional page, but I'm still.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, let us know, you know, about your professional page, David. You're now the minister.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly going to be whenever I graduate, kind of have it's like a LinkedIn, but the Facebook version. So not like all the sports stuff will still be on my, you know,
on your regular
Amanda Got Harris page.
Right, right. And then you just be the minister. Is it Minister David?
Yeah, but you know, it's still, you know, David Amanda Got Harris or the coach or, you know, all the other nicknames, you know.
All right, you listen.
Tim Tebow fan club. You know,
yeah, like, that's right. You are part of the Tim Tebow fan club. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Get in our final segment. Talk a little bit about Michael Bennett and the possible racial profiling. And what's different between him and Colin Kaepernick? How come he gets to, you know, have his stance? Obviously, he's a multimillionaire. But Colin Kaepernick, he kind of gets backlash for that. We'll talk about that and more here on 88.3 WHUT's After Further Review. Once again, if you want to listen to this segment, you know, we'll have it back up on our Facebook page and our on our iTunes. Make sure you guys check out the iTunes right in your pocket if you want to listen to us. And you can listen to us also on the After Further Review Facebook pages. We got the live feed for up. We had a few people joining in. They didn't make any comments, but thank you for watching as you're listening to 88.3 WG's After Further Review. Coming up next, Another tricky topic, racial profiling. This will be interesting here on 88.3 WXUT's After Further Review.